everybody. I'm Larry Jacobson. Happy day after Labor Day 2022, which means that no matter what you're thinking, it's Tuesday. Okay, it's not Monday, which has been driving me nuts all morning. Okay, but it's not Monday. It's Tuesday. Tuesday, September 6, 2022. And we're going to take a ride today. We're going to explore our civil rights history on the road. We're going to travel Freedom's Road, okay, with a new book called Traveling Freedom's Road, which is a guide to exploring our civil rights history. And I want to talk about that in light of how educators can use it, school libraries can use it, et cetera, to talk about exploring our civil rights history on the road, okay? And we have the author of the book, again, Traveling Freedom's Road, Jack Hanrahan, officially John Hanrahan, we'll call him Jack, from Charlottesville, Virginia, home of Thomas Jefferson, another equally great thinker, okay, who actually did this trip, okay, and wrote the book about it. It's terrific. I want school libraries and social studies teachers and all, teachers in the elementary grades to really take a look at having this book available and making it important for the kids to understand that all this happened right around them. All right, so we're going to go on the road with Jack in just a few minutes. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. That's ace-ed.org. That's our home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education, ace-ed.org. And everything I'm going to tell you now is linked over there. So we have teacher-retention.com, our new website, which talks about this incredibly important situation. There are so many great teachers out there. We don't want to lose any of them. We want to keep great teachers teaching. Okay, so there's some professional development opportunities over on the site and just general information. Okay, so that we keep great teachers teaching. Please check it out. SELtoday.org is another one of our websites linked over there at ace-ed.org, and that's all about social emotional learning. Our awards program for excellence in equity, K-12, pre-K-12. Okay, look at the awards icon. You can click right through and nominate yourself, your school, products, whatever you want to do. Okay, colleagues, whatever. All right, it's good stuff. And we had a lot of interest in this, and we extended the nominations process, so please go over and check it out. Our online journal is over there at ace-ed.org, too. That's Equity and Access Pre-K-12. You'll see the magazine icon. Just click on the cover, and you'll enjoy this back-to-school issue. And this podcast, like all of our podcasts, are over there as well, under podcasts, obviously. Okay? Everything's at ace-ed.org. Now let's travel. Let's start the trip down in Charlottesville, Virginia, home of two great thinkers, Thomas Jefferson and Jack Hanrahan. Tom couldn't be here today, so I'm stuck with Jack. Hi, Jack. It's Larry here.
Good morning, Larry. Nice to be with you. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to talk to your listeners.
My pleasure, and it's also must be nice to be compared to Thomas Jefferson, which I think rarely happens.
Yeah, that doesn't happen too often, but I know you too well to know that there's a bit of tease and humor in that.
Thank you, my friend. Okay, and you're pretty smart. Okay, never quite made it to write a Declaration of Independence, but that's okay. We still love you. Okay, Traveling Freedom's Road, everybody, and I have it linked. Okay, over to, if you're listening, you'll see the link over there. You can go over, buy the book, or at least encourage your school librarian to buy the book. Okay, because this is an important way to. And I think this is important to say this, to have kids understand that all this happened where we live. Okay, and it all didn't, by the way, I'll make this point, it all didn't happen in Alabama and Mississippi. Civil rights history happened all over America, and Jack's done a great job on giving us a good guide for it. And, well, maybe I've done it, Jack, but just tell everybody, give us the broad overview of the book. Again, Traveling Freedom's Road.
Sure. The book has five sections. The first one is about 60 pages that has some personal reflections from me about the importance of the civil rights movement and why I wrote the book. Importantly for people who want to take this trip, there's a lot of information about planning, places to go for information, but the book really has what you need. But I dedicated an entire chapter to parents, grandparents, educators who would take young adults and children to any site that ties into African-American history or civil rights history, because mm-hmm. it's very tough history. And there's a lot of excellent yeah. resources from PBS, from the museums that are contained in the book. And all of that is laid out in that first section of the book. The second section of the book is the meat of the book. If you're going to take a trip to dive into civil rights history, you're going to probably want to go to about a dozen destinations, places like Montgomery, Selma, the Delta of Mississippi, where all the events surrounding the kidnapping and murder of Emmett Till occurred, Memphis, and so on. And those dozen chapters take up almost half of the 500-plus page book. But, you know, as you point out, Larry, not all the history took place in those dozen destinations that get their own chapter. So I first get into the five states that you're going to be traveling through to go to those destinations. Georgia. So I'll talk about Albany, Georgia, and the King campaign in 1962, where many people felt that Dr. King experienced failure, but he learned a lot from the Albany campaign in 1962, and there are places to go in Albany, Georgia, about 3 hours south of Atlanta. Similarly, in Mobile, Mobile, Alabama, Scottsboro, Alabama, places, the latter tying into the trial of the Scottsboro Boys, which ultimately ended up in their acquittals through the Supreme Court, and so on. So those five states are the other middle part of the book, and then other southern states like Florida, Virginia, North Carolina, Louisiana, Texas, all of these other southern states also have places where you can connect with this history. So if a teacher in Houston or Dallas or Miami, Florida wants to connect with this history, there are places in their neighborhood where they could take students. Right. And finally, also true with the rest of the United States, I cover 24 other states and the District of Columbia with this important history as well. So that's a broad overview of Traveling Freedom's Road, and it's packed with history, it's packed with guidance for travelers, but it also has a lot of the storytelling that makes this a book for the armchair traveler as well.
Indeed it does, and I'm more of an armchair traveler these days myself, and I enjoyed every page of the book, Jack. I got to tell you, it's really something. And, you know, I was thinking as you were going down that list, a lot of the civil rights, I know, I just want to make this clear to people. A lot of the civil rights history has to do with violence, which is very sad, by the way. Okay. Needless to say, you know, you talked about Emmett Till just as a good example. I thought you were going to bring up the three civil rights workers who were killed and found in that earthen dam in your Philadelphia, Mississippi. You know, when you can go on and on with that. And, you know, in Montgomery, you have Bryan Stevenson's museum that's fairly new, 5 years old maybe now. Okay, you know, the lynching, what I call the lynching museum. I think it has a more official name, but it's really a...
Right, the National Memorial for Peace and Justice.
Thank you. And that's really worth seeing. And I know they did a piece on 60 Minutes on it. But, you know, I was thinking... there's all, and I want you to just talk about this if anything comes to mind. What came to my mind, there are pieces of history, and I remember when my son lived in New Orleans, okay, he took me to the trolley, the railroad stop where the Plessy versus Ferguson happened, which is not a violent episode, but it's an important episode in civil rights history. How much of the sites that you go to, I hate to ask this question, but I just wanted to reflect violence and how many of them reflect other stuff. Okay, if you can just kind of put that into a perspective.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, your point about there's an awful lot of violence and...
Yeah, there's too much. But, yeah, we have to face that. I don't mean to misunderstand that. But just Where's the nonviolent stuff?
Places that, like the bus, the place where Plessy was arrested for riding in what those days was the wrong section of his of this boy car. But the book will take you to schools, like in Virginia, about 75 miles south of where I live. There's a school in Farmville, Virginia, a real town called Farmville. The Moton High School, which is now a museum, and a young woman, 16-year-old Barbara Johns, whose statue now is in Statuary Hall, replacing the statue of General Robert E. Lee, not too long ago. And Barbara Johns called an assembly of the students at her high school, causing them to walk out because of the substandard facilities that they had at their high school. And that case became one of the five cases that became part of the Brown v. Board of Education decision in 1954. And I point out the other four locations besides the Moton High School, which are part of that Brown v. Board decision, where they're relevant. Obviously, the Brown decision emanates from a case in Kansas, but places in Delaware and other cities, states around the country were part of that broad decision and important decision in 1954. You know, here's an example where the book talks about an incident that happened in Shreveport, Louisiana, that while not violent, was very ugly. Sam Cooke, a great musical artist.
Oh, my God, yeah. One of my favorites. Wow.
Well, yeah, was on tour with his band and colleagues and had a reservation at a Holiday Inn in Shreveport. And when they all showed up, despite how famous he was and being on tour, he was the wrong color for the clerk behind the desk, and he was denied accommodations. And that incident led Sam Cooke to write A Change Is Gonna Come, one of the classic songs of the civil rights era, one that wasn't very popular when it was released by Mr. Cooke in 1963, but eventually rose to be number three on the rock and roll hits of all time from Rolling Stone. I don't think it even cracked the top 30. He only performed it, not to get off on a Sam Cooke rabbit hole, but he only performed one time on a Friday night live on television. He only performed it that one time on a Friday night on the Johnny Carson show. And the song didn't get talked about much because a couple of days later, a little group from England appeared on Ed Sullivan, the Beatles, for their first appearance. And that song got, let's say, overshadowed.
Here's to the Beatles and Sam Cooke. I got to tell you, you know, it's interesting. We unfortunately, there's a lot of violence with the civil rights history. Okay, but there are other places where bad things happen, but they're monumental. Okay, and like you just said, I just want people to understand that this is a really good look. And what's going on, Jack? I wanted to ask you, what prompted you to take the trip to begin with? And I know you're interested in civil rights and all that sort of thing, and you live in Charlottesville. Okay, but what prompted you to make the trip?
So what prompted me to take the trip and what prompted me to write the book are two separate things. So let me talk about what prompted me to take the trip. You and I are about the same age, and I don't know if your recollections of that era.
You sound older. You're only 29. Okay. That's a joke.
Okay. I'll talk about me. I was too young to really remember anything about Emmett Till in the mid-50s, but sort of old enough to remember the violence against the Freedom Riders in Anniston, Alabama, where they were firebombed and almost killed with the Greyhound bus sort of burning up on the highway there outside of Anniston, Alabama. But my recollections were much greater during the 64 to 68 events where, you know, Dr. King led the bus boycott in Montgomery and the Memphis campaign for the sanitation workers that ultimately led to his assassination in 1968. So my awareness of this era was there, but certainly not as deep as wanting to go and connect with it, which when you go into these museums, when you go into these historic homes and churches, you really begin to learn things. And that trip inspired me to want to learn more. And as I would tell friends about my experiences on this trip and my reading, that, you know, people would say, you should really write a book. And I didn't plan on that, but there was, at the time, this is now 2018, 2019, there was no book that was less than a decade old about civil rights travel. And so I started to write and shared some chapters with people, and, you know, they said, you should keep going, and I did. And, you know, the pandemic certainly gave me plenty of time to work on it. And very proud of this book that came out just a couple of months ago, and very also pleased that some folks that are much deeper connected to this history than I am, like Terrence Roberts, one of the Little Rock Nine, and Jerry Mitchell, a reporter who uncovered the truth behind the murders of those Philadelphia, Mississippi civil rights workers, and Medgar Evers in Jackson, Mississippi, and the Birmingham bombers. His journalistic endeavors really brought a lot of bad actors to justice. Anyway, you know, with folks like that saying some nice things about the book, it's made me very proud of it.
Yeah, it should be. And you said something, you know, that it had been a decade or more since somebody had written a book like this. There are other travel guides like this. This one's called Traveling Freedom's Road, A Guide to Exploring Our Civil Rights History. What changed in that decade? Okay, you must have seen stuff. And I know you're not a historian who spends all his life reading all these books, but something must have struck you that it needed an updating. Okay, and a good example would be Bryan Stevenson's museum in the Montgomery. But by the way, because you mentioned, I just want to wish everybody in Jackson, Mississippi, good luck with that lousy water problem they're having. Okay, you brought up Jackson this, and you know, nobody deserves that, a modern city in today's America. And I'm sorry that's happening down there, but please continue. So, but what changed?
I agree. So, really, what changed was a burgeoning interest in this just broad history, just not civil rights only history, but African American history, and come to a better understanding of what went on. You know, textbooks are not always the truth tellers that they could be, or complete truth tellers that they could be. And so a lot of new facilities were going to be coming on board. You mentioned one, the National Memorial for Peace and Justice in Montgomery.
Yeah.
New National Park Service sites began to spring up.
Yeah.
They began to buy properties. The National Park Service has purchased Medgar Evers' home, which was being very well cared for by Tougaloo College in Jackson, but it was largely run by volunteers who did a wonderful job. But that was part of it. Just an awareness that we don't know everything about what occurred in our own history, whether it happened 100 years ago or in the last decade. So that And the last book was a very good one, but a lot of the places that I wanted to visit were too new for that book, which was written in 2008 by a civil rights activist Charles Cobb, whose book is about a lot more of a memoir than a travel book, in my opinion. It's an excellent memoir, but he talks about these places in the context of many of his own experiences working for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee in the 60s. It's a really good book, and it helped me quite a bit, but mine is a bit different. I will point out that after my book was finished but not yet published, two other books came out that deal with this. I'd say one of them is a very good book. It's published by Hachette, which is a major international publishing house.
Mm-hmm.
So its profit motive is to Hachette. I will point out to your listeners that this is not a profit-oriented venture for me. The profits from my book will go to the Equal Justice Initiative, which is Brian Stevenson's organization in Montgomery, the one that oversees those two facilities that we've talked about, the Legacy Museum and the National Memorial for Peace and Justice. And then the second charity that will benefit from the book is Legal Aid Justice Center here in Charlottesville, where I have been a volunteer for the past decade. So it's a different book from the standpoint of charitable intent. It's, in my opinion, a more comprehensive book geographically. Those books, the more recent book from Hachette, kind of focuses on 14 destinations, and that's about it. And it's also the most current. Mine came out a couple of months ago, and theirs came out in 2021. And I pay particular attention to try to keep my information as fresh and current as it could be, and updating almost till it went to press. So,
did you create a website yet for the book?
Yes. The website is travelingfreedomsroad.com. If you go on that website, you'll see that charitable intent that I just talked about. It'll also tell you that you can buy this book on Amazon, which makes it pretty easy to buy. Some people prefer to buy and support their local bookstore, and I'm fine with that. Larry, you were kind enough to mention school libraries. Most school libraries buy their books from Ingram, a major book distributor to bookstores and libraries. And on the website, there's the ISBN number. Each book has a unique number, and the ISBN number for my book, both paperback and ebook, is listed on the website. And the website also will give people a chance to get a free chapter if they would like to see it. And you can get my email address on the website, and I'm happy to send a free chapter. And the one that I offer is the one on Philadelphia, Mississippi, which has no major museums. Some of the major sites that deal with the events of Freedom Summer 1964, which led to the murders of the civil rights workers in and around Philadelphia. That chapter.
Were they right? Schwerner, Janie Goodman? Is that right?
Janie, Schwerner and Goodman.
Yeah.
They are they're memorialized to a degree in Philadelphia, but some of the major sites that I think a person who wants to physically be present where this history occurred, the sad history occurred, are not memorialized. I mean, the place where their bodies were found is they were on private property.
On an earthen
no
dam,
marker.
If I remember. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, in an earthen dam. Large earthen dam, but I suggest going by the property, and I kind of note a location where it would be wonderful if people would drop a bouquet of flowers or some other type of memorial. And the second place that is not memorialized is where their blue Ford station wagon conditions near the Bocchino Swamp.
Wow.
Larry, you still there?
I'm here.
Yeah. Sorry, a call came in, and I wanted to be sure it didn't disconnect us.
No. We're fine. We're good. Okay. We were talking about Cheney, Schwerner, and Goodman and all that stuff down in Philadelphia.
All right. So if your listeners would like to read a chapter, just shoot me an email at the address on the website, and I'm happy to get them the Philadelphia chapter, which not only talks about that murder, but recognizes other heroes of the Freedom Summer Movement. Robert Moses, who only passed away about a year ago now, was a quiet but compelling leader during this time, a young man who you have to read his story, and he was a real hero for the civil rights movement. I talk about the church that those three civil rights workers went to because the church was set on fire, and one of the most compelling experiences of my own trip was standing at that church in front of a bell that survived the fire. And it speaks to the resilience of the people who are part of this movement, their persistence, their everlasting dedication to what goals they wanted to achieve. And that bell really spoke to me while I was in front of that church. And I really, it's a trip down a dusty, long dirt road to get to the Mount Zion Church, but it's worth it.
What town was that, Jack? What town is that?
Well, it's in the Longdale section of Philadelphia, Mississippi.
Okay, got it.
Yeah,
I was going to ask you my next question. I'll ask it, but I think it might have just answered. I was going to ask you, well, I'll ask you too. Touched you the most? Well, I think it might have been that bell. Okay.
Well, that was
something else.
So many things that touched.
Yeah. Well, which one touched you the most? And let me ask you the other one. Which one surprised you the most on all these travels? There's a good one.
Wow.
Yeah. Or maybe I should ask it a different way. What surprised you the most about these travels? Not the thing that surprised you, but what surprised you the most?
That's really a great question. Let me just give me one second because there's.
Sure.
I mean,
we'll play elevator music. All right. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I guess what surprised me is how dedicated the volunteers who I met.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
Homes. I mean, there was a woman in Jackson, Minnie Watson. There was a volunteer that I met when I went to the Moton Museum here in Farmville, Virginia. There's a volunteer that I met at the parsonage of the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church. There is a church leader that I met at the church, the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, Wanda Battle. Oh, my goodness. These people just brought the history to life.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Give them lived it.
Yeah.
Ms. Watson in Jackson was enamored with Medgar Evers when she was a student at Tougaloo. And you just cannot replace. I mean, I realize that the book takes you so far into understanding this history, but taking the trip really makes a difference.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to back to Philadelphia for a second. My wife and I went into a cafe called McClellan's Cafe on Carver Avenue in Philadelphia, which was the heart of the civil rights movement in Philadelphia back in the 60s. And this cafe was owned by the woman who's the proprietor now. Her mom and her dad owned this. And it was just the center of activity. And just being in that place, talking to Beverly and her husband Randy about the history in those four small walls was just an experience. I didn't read about that on any website.
Of course.
We just made a point to go to the Carver Avenue neighborhood, which is I put in the book, a place that you should go, and it just was huge payoff. It was just a magnificent. I think we planned on spending 15 to 20 minutes just walking up down that street. It took us over 2 hours, and probably an hour and a half of that was talking to Beverly and Randy. A very meaningful experience.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And you make a good point. You know, we can see pictures of a place, okay, and get a feeling of it, and you can read about it, and you'll also get a feeling about it, okay? But when you go in there, and when you travel Freedom's Road, if I may, a lot of this stuff happened fairly not so long. It wasn't 2,000 years ago. It wasn't 200
exactly.
years ago. Okay?
Yeah.
The people are still there. This is still active history. Okay?
Right.
And it's an important history.
Again, yeah, Beverly is McClellan's daughter, and you could just imagine Beverly, who was probably about the same age as I was, as a 12-year-old, you know, sitting in a corner listening to the planning sections.
Exactly.
Probably seeing a lot of the... Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, she definitely remembers. It's a place you should go. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just so much... It's so important to actually see this and feel it and be there, and that's why the book is so important, because it allows people to plan out a route, et cetera, and really see this. And this is really good history. We rarely get a chance to touch history.
You talk about planning out the route. This is a tough trip to plan. When you think of those dozen locations that you want to spend some time in, it's unlike most vacation trips, because you're going to be on the road just about every day. You may need to have appointments at some of the places, and the book points out where you need an appointment, where you need a timed entry ticket, how to go about getting that. So it kind of takes away all the web searching that frankly, I had to do in planning my trip out. And it, it just tries to make a challenging trip more simple, so you can focus on the history as opposed to the on-the-ground logistics. You'll need to have hotel reservations, in my opinion. You need to have a hotel reservation in the places that you want to go to, and you need to plan out your travel to and from. In some cases, like Memphis to Birmingham, this book lays out the trip as a multi-stop trip, although you can start it anywhere you want. But going from Memphis to Birmingham, we decided we would not be able to make that three-hour drive after spending an entire day in Memphis. And so we stayed part way, but we were able to get to Birmingham right as the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute opened at 10 a.m. and saw it and had the 16th Avenue Baptist Church tour and et cetera, et cetera. So the book helps you plan this trip out so you don't have to be disappointed. You don't show up on Tuesday in Memphis when the National Civil Rights Museum is closed, you know, and not that you would waste an entire day, but that is a museum among several that you really must see, because it's just excellent content.
No, it's just astounding, and you did a hell of a good job on this book, Jack, I got to tell you. And I'll say, you know, we're on Education Talk Radio. I got to tell you, this is I'm an old history teacher, okay? And I mean, you got to be able to touch history, all right? And if you can touch it and see it and feel it, you know, in this case, talk to people who actually experienced it, all right? It's a real Sturbridge Village, if I do say so myself. They aren't actors. Okay,
thank you. And, you know, to your audience of teachers and educators and administrators, you know, the book certainly covers the well-known names and places. You know, there's Emmett Till and there's Rosa Parks and there's Dr. King. But there are people that are unsung heroes and heroines
Good point.
Of the movement. There's a woman that's in the Atlanta chapter, Ruby Doris Smith Robinson, and I have a sidebar on Ruby Doris, and a history teacher could use this book to give assignments to students and say, in Hanrahan's book, there's a one-page sidebar on Ruby Doris Smith Robinson, and there's a sidebar on Sarah Mae Fleming in South Carolina, and Eunita Blackwell in Mississippi. These are names that a lot of people just don't know, but there's enough information out there that a middle school or high school student could get a report done and share with his or her classmates of who these individuals are, what their contributions were, why we need to say their names, why we need to remember these individuals. I mean, and it's not just women, although the book pays particular.
Well, actually, I was going to bring up that point, Jack. You know, it's interesting. We tend to think John Lewis, Martin Luther King, well, that Rosa Parks is the main exception, but most of the names you brought up today were women. Okay, and we tend to think history is male. All right, and it ain't.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So it's that's another side to this. Okay.
Exactly. Farmville to visit the Moton Museum that was, as I said earlier, part of the Brown v. Board decision. I didn't know who Barbara Johns was.
Yeah, exactly.
I had no idea. And her contribution, and this is 3 years before we knew anything about Martin Luther King. Her student protest happened in 1951.
Wow.
I mean,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
She was a real trailblazer.
Scary stuff. That's why she deserves to be in Statuary Hall.
Daisy Bates, that's another name that will be in the Capitol with a statue soon. She was the leader of the Little Rock Nine. She was she and her husband, L.C. Bates, ran a newspaper. They were highly active individuals in civil rights in Arkansas. And they paid a price. I mean, their newspaper advertising revenue went down the tubes. There's all sorts of names in the book, not just women, of course, that just made a huge impact that we don't know about. And that's the opportunity, in my opinion, for educators. And, you know, I mentioned how the book is nationwide. If you're a teacher in Kentucky, you could have your students research Cherokee State Park. This is how bad it was in the 50s and 60s for African Americans. They had to go to their own, quote-unquote, state park in Aurora, Kentucky.
Look up
on a map where Aurora, Kentucky is. That is way down near the Tennessee border. Way down in the corner of Kentucky. So if you live in Louisville or Lexington, you know, to be in, quote, the Black State Park, it's a long drive. You know, the birthplace of W.E.B. Du Bois, one of the great heroes of African-American history, his home is Great Barrington, Massachusetts.
Oh, I didn't know.
There's a town that was built in California by African-Americans run by a chaplain, Alan Allensworth, and the town is Allensworth, California. It's an historic town. I never heard about that before. And there's all of this discovery in the book.
We got to go in just a second, but you remind me, you know, you talk about a specific state park. All over the country, there were specific beaches. If a black person wanted to go to the beach, they didn't go to the same beach. I don't care what state they were in. Okay, that I
absolutely.
Went.
Absolutely.
Okay, they went
the
to the
swimming
their
pools. Were segregated swimming pools.
Yeah,
people.
It's unbelievable.
Some communities cemented over swimming pools. Once they were being forced to integrate the swimming pools, there's a lot of things in the book that I had great joy in discovering for myself. And I hope that readers find that same joy as they discover this book.
I hope teachers do. Jack, we got to go. I can talk to you for hours on this, but we do got to go. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Larry. Again.
Should I make my
the
stupid joke? I'm just thinking about a good
part
joke.
Of this.
Yeah, I was thinking about a good joke because you were talking about W.E.B. Du Bois. Du Bois, and I was saying it should actually be in Fort Lauderdale because that's where Du Bois are. That's a bad joke.
Where right. Du Bois are.
Sorry, everybody. I'm showing my age.
What's that?
Sorry,
Moore?
Mr. Du Bois.
Was that Leslie
I'm
Moore?
Sorry about that. Right, he's in heaven, but I'm sorry about that. Okay.
All right. Well, Larry, best to you. Thank you again. Thank you for the time to talk with your great audience.
We'll see you soon, pal. Thanks, Jack.
I hope so. Bye-bye.
I hope so, too. Bye. Jack Hanrahan, everybody. John Hanrahan, if I may, who wrote Traveling Freedom's Road, A Guide to Exploring Our Civil Rights History. It's a great way to teach your classes. Okay, I don't care where you are. All right, and they've got a website, travelingfreedomsroad.com. Cool stuff. Thanks, Jack, okay, for writing the book and being a guest, et cetera. All the information you need is over on the website here. We'll archive at ace-ed.org. I do got to go, all right? I'm Larry Jacobs, and feel free to use my lousy joke about Fort Lauderdale, okay? And I will talk to you later. Thanks for listening.